hear this song, Kuranga Bodhite Abhi Pulakashaya. It's been a while since we've been here, more than 2 years. Nice to be visiting. Karuna Bhavan is Karuna Bhavan just down there. This is Jagannath Mandir, or is Karuna Bhavan also everything?
You still call it Karuna
Bhavan. It's like Vrindavan. Vrindavan means actually all of Vrindavan. It also means just Vrindavan forest, which is just one part of Vrindavan. So I guess that's Karuna Bhavan, and the whole thing's also Karuna Bhavan. Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda are very nicely present. Having said that, I wonder if you're trying to say something. Yeah. And as you all know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Parama Karuna. He's very, very merciful. He comes to give us what's very, very difficult, and making that very difficult thing very easy, because Krishna consciousness can be very difficult. You may have noticed. And that's the easy part. It's the easy process that's difficult. It's difficult because it's getting the topmost understanding of the absolute truth to those who are at least living in the most unqualified place, Kali Yuga. The Srimad Bhagavatam says, Paramahamsam Nirmatsaranam Sitam. But really, this is for Paramahamsas, Bhagavad Dharma. Srimad Bhagavatam. Paramahamsa means the topmost rung of society, at least civilized society. Topmost rung of civil society of the Paramahamsas. So even if you go through the Varnashram system and you have Brahmachari and Grihastha and Vanaprastha and Sannyas, and then in Sannyasis there are also four different types of Sannyasis, and the topmost Sannyasi is the Paramahamsa Sannyasi. This is the tradition of our Goswamis. They're wearing Paramahamsa Vesh. Paramahamsa means that they have realized the essence of everything, which is Krishna's transcendental pastimes in Vrindavan. That's the essence of all truth. In Bhagavatam, it's stated, Sara, Sara, Samudritam. Sara means the essence. So it says Sara, Sara, the essence of the essence. Or in French, they say, La crème de la crème. But that takes a long time. And it's not easy. It requires that one become purified of all impure things, and then having been purified in that way, one be very fixed in the practice of Krishna consciousness, and ultimately be free from bodily concept of life, and then on the bodily, and then free from the bodily concept of life, one realizes one's eternal relationship with Krishna, and having realized one's eternal relationship with Krishna, one is then a Paramahamsa. But one doesn't have to be a sannyasi. Thakur Bhakti Vinod was a Paramahamsa. Srila Prabhupada was a Paramahansa. Ramana Roy was a Paramahansa. And they were not in the renounced order of life, but they achieved that level of realization which also the topmost sannyasis achieve or realize. And it's a very long process. Krishna says like that. Manusyanam sasesu kashyatati siddhaye yatatam visinhanam. So it may take many, many, many births, and that's just even to get a philosophical understanding. So just philosophical understanding and realization are two different things. So kashyatam veti tapvataha, just veti, just to know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then after that, there's the practical application. Now, Lord Chaitanya has made it very easy. He's given us an easy process to achieve that same result, which means very strict study of Shastra. You should know the language of scriptures, which is Sanskrit. Sanskrit isn't enough to study Shastra. You need to know logic and grammar and rhetoric. And these are extremely complex things. Because otherwise you actually don't understand the message of the scriptures, because the nature of the language is very often esoteric and it's indirect, and it presupposes already high levels of understanding. And that's just to understand what the scriptures is, what to speak of, that one should be very austere and detached. Live in a very purified place. Where is a purified place in Kali Yuga? Where is such a pure place? So there's so many requirements, and there are examples. One example is that of the personified Vedas who performed austerities for creations in order to be able to enter into Krishna's pastimes. These are the Vedas themselves. We're not talking about people, we're talking about the Vedas. So that's a long time when you're talking about creations. You're not talking about a few years or a few lifetimes. It's a long, long time. Well, Lord Chaitanya has given a very simple process. And what's that process? Vishayacharya Serasimajaya Mukhyabhava Hari Hari. So that you chant Hare Krishna, that part we know. Lord Chaitanya has given us the chanting. And when Lord Chaitanya says chant Hare Krishna, what he really means is, well, you chant Hare Krishna anyway, but if you want this result, you have to chant without offense. So to chant offenselessly means Vishayacharya. You have to give up Vishaya. You have to give up illicit material desires. And that's a nice thing that these illicit is being stated, because if it was stated that you have to give up all material desires, then we're really in trouble. We see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. Most of his associates were grihasthas. So when the devotees are being named, there's like a few sannyasis. There's those eight sannyasis in Jagannath Puri, like Brahmananda Bharati. And then the grihasthas, everyone in Navadvipa, except for then Swarup Damodar, who also took sannyas, and Gadadhar Pandit. He was not officially a sannyasi, but he lived like a sannyasi, took the vows of a sannyasi, Kshetra sannyas, to live in a holy place. They were all grihasthas. Grihasthas means they had children. It means that they maintained themselves. But mostly, though, they were brahmanas, which means that they just taught and they were maintained. So it isn't that you give up all vishaya, but you give up illicit vishaya. We're not meant to give up all sense gratification, but sense gratification should be controlled, and it should be done according to Shastra. Vacho vegam, manasakuda vegam, jiva vegam, darupashta vegam, like that. And yukta harviharascha, yukta chaitasya paramasu, yukta svapnana bodhasya. I remember once I was speaking with one Babaji, because when we go on parikrama, then you always go to places where there's so many sadhus. And he was explaining how once he took a vow that until he became free from the modes, he would not eat, sleep, or drink. By the time I was talking to him, he's eating, sleeping, and drinking. But anyway, he did that, and he said he stopped eating, he stopped drinking, he stopped sleeping. But that's, who can do that? So who can do such a thing? It's very rare in this day and age, even in India, it's very rare that you find such people who are actually willing to be sadhus. I know that I often go to Puri. When I first go to India, I go to Puri because, anyway, like here, January, it really starts to get cold. So there's only so much cold that I can handle, so I go to Puri. Is a good place because actually in January, February, even in March this year, of course, it was there in March, but it's like in Mayapur, it was cold this year, very cold, even in March, and February. But the Jagannathpur is always very pleasant during the day. And Orissa is a very special place, especially Puri. Orissa and Bengal. These are the two places of really Gaudiya, the home of Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And although there's a competition, the Bengalis have a saying, I don't know what it is, but the saying is that all Orissans are cheaters. Thieves. And I'm sure the Orissans have a saying about the Bengalis also. And still, they're all natural Vaishnavas. And in the villages, it's very nice. It's something that you don't see in Bengal. But when they have festivals, they have this tradition that in all the villages, they have many Radha Krishna deities, not one. Or they may have other deities as well, but they really have this tradition of palanquins, of carrying deities around on palanquins. And sometimes when you go, like you go on, I've gone on Dol Purnima, which very often with them falls a couple of days after our Gaur Purnima. And it's like a traffic jam of palanquins with deities. And sometimes they're coming to a village clearing. Many villages come together and they put these palanquins in a circle, as many as 75 of them in a big circle, and all the people sit in the middle and they all do kirtan over there. They have a special kirtan style. They all go around in a circle and they take two or three steps forward and one step back and two or three steps forward, and they keep going around and around and around. Put Tulsi Devi in the middle, and the deities are around on the edge. Anyway, I was sort of digressing from the point. The point was that even recently in villages, the qualification for getting married for the boy is how well, in other words, the father judges, will I marry my daughter to this boy? And the basis was, or is, I'd say not so much is now, but was, is how well that boy can explain Srimad Bhagavatam. So if he can explain Bhagavatam, then I'll give him my daughter. Otherwise, if he doesn't know Bhagavatam, then what's the use? And they used to have another sort of samskar ceremony, which would take place at age 8. And that still goes on, but very rarely. I'm just explaining how people are no longer sadhus anymore, even in India. And that's at 8 years of age. There's sort of like a maturing of a boy into a man, and or at least he becomes more than just a playing all the time, but it's not a man, but he's getting older, but it's only at age 8. And what they do is that he actually formally decides to step, to enter into the home, and take some more responsibility. He's no longer just playing. So what they do is that he goes to the edge of the village, and all the villagers come, and the boy comes, and they draw a line, and then he takes a decision. If he comes this way, he comes to the village, comes home and starts helping, and helping with the agriculture, he's not playing anymore and he's working. If he goes the other way, he can walk away and just leave. And he just takes sannyas at age 8, he just becomes a sadhak. And it still happens. They do it as a tradition, and you can bet that there's a lot of men in the circle making sure that he doesn't go in the wrong direction. But if, because now it's just become a ritual. But I was speaking with one devotee there, but if it still happens that 8-year-old boys have those type of samskaras and inclinations that they leave. They leave with nothing, and technically no one can say anything. If he crosses the line and goes, then the parents, they can cry as much as they want. But the village elders say, sorry, you gotta let him go. And he goes. Perhaps like Shankaracharya took sannyas at age 8, and that was a long time ago. Not Shankaracharya. So people don't have these type of samskaras anymore. It's not... It's very difficult. Therefore, there's no question of just giving up all sense gratification, but restricting sense gratification, religious sense gratification, diminishing sense gratification that's always dovetailed with Krishna in such a way that naturally, vishaya vigarasova chambrasopyasya, naturally one in time gives up the desire for all things by developing a higher taste for Krishna, because artificially it can't be done. We can't do it artificially. So, Vishaya Chariyasya Rasimajaya Mukhi Boro Hari Hari. And we should chant Hare Krishna. You can't chant offensively unless you become regulated and you've accepted the religious principles. Then, one has to actually become offenseless. So anyway, you all know, well, we have these 10 offenses to the holy name. Because in order to be able to get this type of spiritual benefit that was gotten by such great austerity, penance, sacrifice, study, and so on, you have to do something. So what that something is, you have to chant Hare Krishna, but you can't chant Hare Krishna any other way. You got to chant Hare Krishna free of offense. And when chanting is offenseless, then it becomes very powerful, then it becomes very potent. And, you know, there's so many examples of that Srila Prabhupada gives. It's like a fire. If you're using wet wood, you're not going to get very far. You're not going to have much of a fire. You're going to just always, what you're going to be doing is you have a constant job keeping the fire going. If you're using dry wood, you light the fire, it burns. You don't need to do anything other than keep putting fuel on it. But with wet wood, it just sputters, and it will go out. So that's a real, and that's for us, is what we really call the challenge of Krishna consciousness, is getting to this offenseless stage of chanting. And then by offenseless chanting, one can chant Hare Krishna with real potency. And the nature of that potency is such is that gradually it can attract Krishna's attention. Nam Kora Bahihoi. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, he says for offensive chanting, he says, you may be saying the words, but you're not chanting Hare Krishna. So the, you know, it comes in the letters and syllables and so on, But it's not like that. It's like, you know, there can be a lot of black stones, but every black stone is in the Shalagram Shila. And one devotee, he had this Shalagram Shila. He was really proud of it. He was, because when you hold it up to the light, it glowed green. In fact, it had two colors. So then finally, he's before Ramachandra, and he called him Ram Gopal because one side was blue and one side was green. So he took it to Padmanabha Goswami, who was an expert on Shalagrams. He says, look, and it's like a transparent. He just pounced on the ground because it was a marble painted black. And the body had been worshipping it for quite a few years. It's not good not to worship something that's not a Shila or a deity. Anyway, just threw it down and it just like bounced up. It was a marble, it was just painted black. So everything that glitters is in gold, everything that black is in the Shalagram, every word Krishna isn't Krishna. It may just be the letters, but the actual name isn't really present. But when it is present, then it gradually attracts Krishna, it causes the heart to melt, and when your heart melts, then you can cry. And until Prabhupada says, you have to learn this art of crying. So it's not like being an actor and learning how to cry like that. It means that one has to learn how to chant Hare Krishna in such a way that the heart melts. And then Srila Prabhupada, in that nice explanation of Mahamantra, then he says, just like a child crying out for his mother. So when one cries, just like a child cries for his mother, then you automatically get your mother's attention. Talk otherwise, or what to speak of if you're talking to someone else and doesn't pay attention. But when you're crying, you get the attention. Similarly, when one cries for Krishna, one gets Krishna's attention. And then when you get Krishna's attention and Krishna blesses a devotee, then he's able to chant with ecstasy and with love. And that type of chanting really produces that type of Paramahamsa Nirmatsaranam Satam, that realization, which is accessible only for great Paramahamsas. So it's a simple thing, chant Hare Krishna, but there's sort of a lot involved in it. It's a sutra, chant Hare Krishna, go back to Godhead, but just like with every sutra, you sort of unpack it. You unpack the letters Om, and you get Srimad Bhagavatam and all the Vedas and everything. So similarly, you have to unpack, you know, that phrase, chant Hare Krishna and go back to Godhead. And Gauranga Bolite Havi Pulakashari. In order to be able to help us cry, then when we say the chanting name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Gauranga, Panchatattva Mantra, and we call out to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there's a special blessing, special potency involved, because although Gauranga, later in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we read how Shivananda Sen, this was his mantra, and it's described there, and Prabhupada explains in the purport how Gauranga is the same as Radha Krishna, the same syllables, and it's the same potency by saying it. But the difference is that it's but there's no offense, so there's no offensive chanting in chanting Panchatattva Mantra. It's all sort of offenseless. Therefore, it's very potent, and it helps us clear the heart, and the benefit is the same. Of course, one could ask, why don't we just chant that instead? And the reason is because that's not what Gauranga told us to do. That's why. In other words, he told us to take the long way rather than the short way. We could have been chanting just the Panchatattva Mahamantra and had a shortcut. But now there is no shortcut, because since Lord Chaitanya said you have to chant Hare Krishna, therefore even if we think, well, I'll take the shortcut, but he's already blocked the shortcut, Because if he says you got to take the long way, then long way, but that's the way, because Krishna is the worshipable deity of Gaudiya Vaishnavas, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna showing us how to achieve him. So he doesn't. This is his instruction. This is very, it's quite an illuminating thing that even though something may be easier, quicker, but still we may get an instruction not to do the easier, quicker route, but we're asked to do the longer route. But it's sure. If one applies oneself to the process conscientiously, it's sure. Still, Prabhupada told us before Kirtan, we should chant Hare Krishna, and devotees to also do that during japa. That's also good. Anytime is good. Anytime. So many names of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Gauranga, Chaitanya, Gaura, and so on. Gauranga bolite have purakashari, Hari Hari bolite nayani bhagini. So here it says, if you chant, your hair is standing on end when you chant the name Gauranga. By chanting the name Gauranga, then Hari Hari, Hari Hari, then now means you're chanting Hare Krishna. Then that way you'll be able to chant with tears. So the two things are connected, and that's why Srila Prabhupada always told us, not only it's just a matter of chanting, but it also implies that there's a process. The process is that it's not possible to approach Krishna directly. We have to go to Krishna through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which means that we go to Krishna through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, and particularly we're going to Krishna through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. It means that devotional service means devotional service to Krishna. But actually, serving Krishna is quite a demanding thing and not an easy thing. Because, in the same way, there's so many offenses involved. It's more complex. So what we actually have is, while we're chanting Hare Krishna, we still have the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which means Krishna service through the medium of Lord Chaitanya's instruction, made for us very, very easy. So that we say we spread the Krishna consciousness movement. And by that, we directly engage in the best and the most confidential type of service, which is more or less synonymous with what's going on, because when we talk about Krishna service, we're talking about what's going on with the liberated souls in the spiritual world. They're the ones who are serving Krishna. You can't serve Krishna unless you're liberated. So only liberated souls directly serve Krishna. And yet at the same time, we're given the same opportunity to be serving Krishna. But how? Because we serve Krishna through Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Through Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is giving us a very simple and offenseless-free process, we're rendering confidential service. This confidential service of giving knowledge about Krishna, informing others about Krishna, of bringing others to Krishna, of giving others Krishna's prasada, of giving others Krishna's holy name. These are very personal services that we have the opportunity to do, or the good fortune to do, because we're here in the material world, which is full of conditioned souls. And we're doing them through the vehicle of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. And more or less, it gives us direct access or direct entrance into the spiritual world. In other words, it becomes very, very easy. Therefore, Prabhupada just emphasized these things. Chanting Hare Krishna, preaching, giving Krishna consciousness to others. It's more than just a means of sustenance, that we're maintaining ourselves by preaching, by selling books. It's more than just giving Krishna consciousness to others, which is beneficial for them. It's actually a means for engaging us in devotional service. We're engaging in devotional service of our acharyas, because that's how we're getting our mission. So without serving great devotees, Shushitova Sadadana Savasudeva Katavati, you can't advance. So we're serving through them. And what is it that we're serving through them? We're serving Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. So Gauranga Vodite Havi. So here we're chanting the name of Gauranga, we're chanting the mission of Lord Gauranga, which is the same thing, we're giving it to others. And ultimately that way, through this process, we're approaching Krishna. And what Krishna consciousness in one aspect really means is that when we become mature in Krishna consciousness, we realize that the activities of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, which externally display the preaching, are actually internally the activities that go on in the spiritual world. They're not different. It's just we who are bound by sensual perception and don't have very much inner spiritual perception, we just see this sort of external thing going on. But simultaneously there's an internal service and an internal development, and that becomes manifest in due course of time. As an example, I was just writing this book, and this reference was with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Jiva Goswami, and they both say, they raise this question, he says, what is the destination of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? So, they say that those devotees who are exclusively devoted to Lord Chaitanya, they go to that part of Goloka Vrindavan, it's called Svetadvip, where Lord Chaitanya is eternally engaged in Sankirtan, Navadvip in the spiritual world. Those devotees who are exclusive worshippers of Lord Krishna, they go to Vrindavan, Goloka Vrindavan. Those devotees who jointly worship Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Krishna, as we do in our Krishna consciousness movement, he says at the time of leaving their bodies, they get two spiritual bodies. One goes one place, the other goes the other place. And so they're in both places. In one place, they're there in their, what's called their Siddha Swarup, and the other one in the Sadhaka. Both are perfectional states, but in one state he's a Brahmana, chanting Hare Krishna, meditating upon the good fortune of some cowherd boy, say for instance, who's serving Krishna, and in the other form, he's that cowherd boy serving Krishna, but here he may not be aware, sometimes not. In any case, he's got two spiritual bodies. And these things are all going on, or this evolution or development takes place and goes on simply through this natural process of serving Srila Prabhupada by serving Sankirtan movement that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would give us, chanting Hare Krishna. It's a natural evolution that takes place, of which we get to see, you know, like icebergs. You know, 10% is on the surface, the other part is down there in the bottom. But we need to do it carefully. And if we're doing it carefully, then the bottom gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and then it grows nicely. But because our main business is, and therefore if we're doing it properly, one really doesn't have to worry about other things. It happens. Because our main worry is to be pleasing our acharyas, is to be pleasing Lord Chaitanya, and that's very clear what you have to do. Like Srila Prabhupada, he was doing this until he said, I want to do this to the last breathing. That was Prabhupada's mood. He didn't want to retire anywhere. He just wanted to preach until he could preach. So even Even when he could barely talk, Srila Prabhupada was still giving his purports to Srimad Bhagavatam. Because if we have that real faith, then we know, yes, we do. We chant Hare Krishna, we serve our preaching mission, and we regularly read Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and then the result is there, the result is guaranteed. And we view or realize that result at a mature time. Anyway, it's getting a little late, we'll stop, but we'll continue tomorrow. Bhagavatam talks is what time?
Usually
7:35. Okay. So you have to forgive if I don't show up till 7:35, because I have to do some writing in the morning, otherwise I won't get time. Between other things. Okay. So tomorrow morning then. So the Prabhupada he I go with him and he